from deep inside your radio.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
Oh, stand in line, Katie. Won't you? Anyway, just on general principles, ladies and gentlemen from New Orleans, and first of all, a huge thank you to everyone at the who works at or came to the Contemporary Arts Center here in New Orleans over the last couple of nights to see the last iterations of the Christmas sing-along show for this year. A show, no matter what you in Los Angeles who have the misfortune of reading the L.A. Times might think, was in its entirety created and conceived by Judith Owen. Yes, even the 12 Days of Christmas. I know. Strange, isn't it? David Prather? Have you no shame? No, it's just, you know, when you see your wife mugged. But no real reason to indulge in negative feelings this wondrous weekend when so many wonderful things are opening and closing. But enough about show business. Ladies and gentlemen, briefly news from the Inspectors General. Government inspections to uncover, because, you know, I'm going to be flying in 2 days. Government inspections to uncover serious maintenance problems that cause airline crashes are often delayed for years or miss the biggest risks. Aside from that, on the money. This according to the Transportation Department's Inspector General in a report circulated among key congressional committee members. The IG identified several weaknesses that undermine the FAA's Airline Maintenance Oversight Program. Well, there's oversight. They're overlooking it. Unless the FAA fixes these weaknesses, the report warns its ability to effectively oversee the national airspace system is lessened. So, strap in. And from the buried lead department, and this, by the way, is a very special edition of the show. You'll find out why in a moment. I know they're all very special. This is, anyway, from the buried lead department, this is from a story in the Washington Post, I believe, regarding our responsibility for aiding the Afghans. And it starts out with blah, 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 blah. After serving as a senior U.S. diplomat responsible for Kandahar, Bill Harris bristles at the U.S. government's reluctance to give more money directly to the Afghans. But we get down to the way down to the bottom. And here you go. Here you go, everybody. Apropos of the administration's Afghan review released this week. This really is all you need to know. Bill Harris, who served as the senior U.S. diplomat responsible for Kandahar, says, there's no way in the world that the Afghans could steal as much as we waste. See? We're still number one. Hello, welcome to the show.
Every year I get ants in my pants when Christmas comes along. Every year I go into a dance, I know every single Christmas song. Every year I am first on the block to tell Santa what to bring. Every year I jump in with the flock, flying with the reindeer on the wing. I've got Christmas down pat. I know just where Christmas is at. You got your snow, you got your sleet, rain, and hail. I got Christmas by the tail. I got Christmas by the tail. You might say it is my thing. Bomb and humbug, I don't want to hear it. I say, come on, let those sleigh bells ring. Every Christmas I throw all my blues away. I'm thinking green and red. Decorating, anticipating, I'm high each night. Christmas gonna get me down. I'm not doing no run around. I show Christmas just to its boss. If Christmas don't like it, then it's Christmas's loss. It's in December that I always remember Christmas is in sight. It's becoming a habit. I'm ready to grab it by the tail.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news from outside the bubble. First, the Vatican tried to stop Irish church leaders from defrocking a pedophile priest whose abusive behavior was known about from the early 1970s. This is according to a previously censored chapter from a report on clerical child abuse in Dublin revealed this week. Father Tony Walsh, you know, was imprisoned for raping boys last week, is named in the report as one of the worst child abusers in the Dublin Archdiocese. The chapter describes how church leaders ordered the defrocking of Walsh in 1993 after receiving complaints of abuse over 15 years. The Vatican overruled the verdict and ordered him to be sent to an Irish monastery instead. Walsh was finally dismissed in 1996 after police opened a criminal investigation, and he attacked a boy in a pub lavatory after a family funeral. Oh, bless you now, Father. The Catholic Church had tried to suppress the publication of Chapter 19 of this report, which concludes that there had been a widespread cover-up of pedophilia in the Dublin Archdiocese. Priests, canons, monsignors, bishops, and even the Archbishop of Dublin knew about Walsh's behavior, says the report. The first complaint leveled against him was in 1975, 2 days after he was appointed as a parish priest in Ballyfermot, West Dublin, but nothing was done. The report also describes as astonishing a letter from Archbishop Connell thanking Walsh for his, quote, dedicated work in Ballyfermot. He was permitted to continue as a priest, even though a report to the Archdiocese in 88, described him as, quote, a very disturbed man who is always going to be dangerous and could not be let near schools, children, confession, etc., unquote. The report described how some priests felt his activities were hushed up, and the Monsignor was outraged at the suggestion the police be informed of his activities. But now, from the There Are No Leaks in the News and No News in the Leaks department, these latest from WikiLeaks this week, thanks to The Guardian. U.S. officials had evidence of widespread torture by Indian police and security forces in Kashmir and were secretly briefed by Red Cross staff about the systematic abuse of detainees in Kashmir, according to leaked diplomatic cables. The dispatches reveal that U.S. diplomats in Delhi were briefed in 2005 by the International Committee of the Red Cross about the use of electrocution, beatings, and sexual humiliation against hundreds of detainees. Other cables show that as recently as 2007, American diplomats were concerned about widespread human rights abuses by Indian security forces, who they said relied on torture for confessions. I know, the ironies are just wickalicious. The revelations are embarrassing for Delhi, which takes pride in its status as the world's biggest democracy. The most highly charged dispatch is an April 2005 cable from the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi, which reports that the Red Cross had become frustrated with the Indian government, which they said had not acted to halt the continued ill-treatment of detainees. The Red Cross concluded that India condones torture. Hey, who doesn't? Come on now. And that the torture victims were civilians, as militants were routinely killed. In 852 cases, the detainees reported ill treatment. According to the Red Cross, a total of 171 described being beaten. 681 said they had been subjected to one or more of 6 forms of torture. 498 on which electricity had been used. 381 who had been suspended from the ceiling. 294 who had had muscles crushed in their legs by prison personnel sitting on a bar placed across their thighs. 234 tortured with water. It's not torture. Thanks. And 302 sexual cases, according to the Red Cross. Cable said the situation in Kashmir was much better as security forces no longer roused entire villages in the middle of the night and detained inhabitants indiscriminately. There were some 300 detention centers 10 years ago, said the Red Cross. Now there are a lot fewer, although the organization still has never gained access to the most notorious detention center in Srinagar, the cargo building. Wouldn't you like to go to the cargo building? No. And striking resemblances between BP's Gulf of Mexico disaster and a little-reported giant gas leak in Azerbaijan. That's right, even giants have gas. Experienced by BP 18 months beforehand have emerged from leaked cables, revealing that some of BP's partners in the gas field were upset that the company was so secretive about the incident it even allegedly withheld information from them, like Chevron. They also say BP was lucky it was able to evacuate its 212 workers safely after the incident, which resulted in two fields being shut and output being cut by at least 500,000 barrels a day for months. On the Azerbaijan gas leak, a cable reports for the first time BP suffered a blowout in September 2008, as well as the gas leak that the firm acknowledged at the time. So it did not acknowledge the blowout. Due to the blowout of a gas injection well, there was a lot of mud on the platform, which BP would analyze to help find the cause of the blowout, according to the cable. Within a few weeks after the incident, the cable said BP's then head of Azerbaijan admitted it was possible the company would never know the cause. According to another cable, in January of 2009, BP thought that, quote, a bad cement job, sound familiar, was to blame for the gas leak in Azerbaijan. BP was also criticized for not initially sharing all of its information with U.S. authorities about the scale. We know that. The gas field in the Caspian Sea was in production when the leak and blowout occurred. The Guardian newspaper asked BP questions following up on this leak. Not the gas leak, the leak of the diplomatic cables. BP declined to answer questions. Interesting, because they're usually so open about all this. The cable says at least some of BP's partners, including Chevron and ExxonMobil, are upset with BP's performance in this episode, as they claim BP has sought to limit information flow about the event, even to its partners. If, in fact, this production shutdown was due to BP technical error, BP's reputation in Azerbaijan will take a serious hit, according to the U.S. diplomatic cable. So no news from WikiLeaks, just a big blowout from BP that occurred just months before the Gulf of Mexico. That is all, really. What's the deal? What's the big deal? News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now... Yes, it's our friend the Atom. The Magnox reactor near the River Severn, this would be in Wales, was the first commercial power plant in the world, nuclear power plant in the world. Plans have now been set in motion to seal it for 64 years to allow radiation to drop to safe levels. Really, I thought the reactor has been closed since the late 1980s. The last 20 years have been spent dismantling and decommissioning the various parts, as well as transporting the nuclear waste to a temporary storage facility. That process is now complete. The long-term question of where the removed nuclear waste is going to go still hasn't been answered. The majority of Britain's high-level radioactive waste is stored in a temporary facility. Most other countries with nuclear programs have constructed or are constructing a geologic disposal facility where waste is buried deep underground. The last report on Britain on the subject dates from July 2006. A committee recommended a burial at a depth of between 200 and 1,000 meters with no intention to retrieve the waste in the future. The report also concluded, however, this would be impossible to implement for several decades due to the social and ethical concerns over such a project. The government now says communities from around the United Kingdom would need to volunteer to host such a facility in return for infrastructure development and jobs. So far, no community has volunteered. In this country, a federal licensing panel shot down most of Nevada's legal challenges to the planned Yucca Mountain nuclear waste repository in a ruling this week. The hearing probably will continue to weigh safety issues with the project. However, the state had one victory. The judges made special note of Nevada's scientific claim that erosion could cause the surface of Yucca Mountain to completely erode during the first 10,000 years of the project, leaving waste unprotected by the mountain's geology in the future, said the executive director of the Nevada Agency for Nuclear Projects. The federal EPA, don't you know, requires that nuclear waste must be kept away from the public and environmental exposure for, any guesses? 1 million years. Because humans have a real good track record for doing stuff for 1 million years. Why, it wasn't 1 million years, ladies and gentlemen. 1 million years. Nevada objects, as you know, to the federal government's plan for entombing 77,000 tons of highly radioactive waste in Yucca Mountain, saying to do so would endanger the public and the environment. Federal regulators said this week they have recently seen an uptick in the safety consciousness and problem-solving abilities among workers at the San Onofre nuclear generating station. Some people pointed to several recent problems as proof that things are still not right at the plant south of Los Angeles. Maybe David Prather can do a show down there. Tony Pruitt, a deputy director with the NRC, told executives from Southern California Edison, which runs San Onofre, that his on-site inspectors have noticed employees and managers are more successful in spotting problems and fixing them before they grow. Quote, the trick now is for you guys to continue some of the successes you've had in the last 2, 3, 4 months, says Pruitt. San Onofre has had increased levels of inspection from the NRC for the past 3 years, as workers of the plant continue to report safety problems and complain publicly that their concerns go unheard or that they fear retaliation for reporting problems. Officials from the NRC say they're cautiously optimistic about Xcel Energy's progress in addressing a series of human errors at the Prairie Island nuclear plant in Minnesota. Xcel this week reported to the commission about steps it's made to improve training and procedures at the plant. The plant has been getting extra inspections for about 1.5 years. Because things have been going so well. And Progress Energy is working to repair a leak that released water with elevated levels of, say it with me now, radioactive tritium into the basement of the plant's emergency generator building. This is in Southport, North Carolina. The agency detected the leak last Thursday when water pooled on the building's concrete floor and reported it to the NRC. The repair plan has not yet been set. No hurry, boys. Figure it out on your own time. Clean, cheap, safe, too cheap to meter. Our friend, say goodbye, Addy.
Goodbye.
Our friend, the Adam. Now, ladies and gentlemen, because it's a special time of year, here is coming up moments from now, a very special new version of Peter and the Wolf. But before that, here is a Christmas message from Glenn Beck.
The three wise men went to Bethlehem with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They brought no gifts for Joseph and Mary. No, nothing for her. You see, it was all so very sudden. Of the moment, they had just the spur. So the three wise men, they went to Bethlehem with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, their dried tree sap, or resins, as you can see on the blackboard here, that's the frankincense. And the myrrh. They were brought there to calm baby Jesus. To make his wee engine purr. Oh, no, nothing sexist here. Mary could enjoy the benefits. To relax after childbirth, for sure. So, it's easy to guess why the wise men brought the frankincense and the myrrh. Oh, but But the other gift, it might make you wonder. The way the story has always been told. You know, maybe the Roman economy was collapsing. Too much stuff bought, and not enough sold. Or, you know, maybe they were minting counterfeit coins that were not worth enough to hold.
Do you think?
That's why the wise men brought along not just frankincense and myrrh, but gold. Oh, they knew their new lord would have need for a reliable property store. You see, he'd be chasing the money changers. So his cash wouldn't be good anymore. No. They'd need to retrofit the manger to keep out the termites and the mold. So the wise men, they remembered to bring along plenty of gold. Funny how smart three wise men could be with their gold, frankincense, and myrrh to sneak into Bethlehem under cover of night and manage to create no big stir. Now, we're surrounded by wise men. But still, we're left out in the cold. So, forget the frankincense and myrrh this year. Call now to order your gold.
We got a very special edition of Larry King Live for you tonight. A story that hasn't been in the news, but should be. It's a story of danger and treachery and incredible courage. And we're going to devote the whole hour to it tonight, so we're postponing our show celebrating the fourth anniversary of the reunion of the Backstreet Boys until the fifth anniversary. Now, because this case is still in the courts, none of the participants themselves could be with us in our Los Angeles studio tonight. So instead, we have a different musical instrument representing each of our guests. The bird is represented by the flute. The duck in this explosive story is represented by the oboe. As well as by the great attorney Mark Garagus. Now the cat is represented by the clarinet. I love the clarinet. Grandfather in his case, who I gotta say I have breakfasted with from time to time at the great Nate and Al's Deli in Beverly Hills. He's represented by the bassoon. Maybe the character in all this who's got the worst rap so far in the media. The wolf is represented by three horns, and they're working on this case pro bono.
Peter, the young boy at the center of this story, he's the same age as my youngest. Maybe he's in Little League, too. Who knows? He's represented by the strings. The hunters who've got guns, or they wouldn't be hunters, they're represented by the kettle drum. That's a drum, not a kettle. Okay, we got that out of the way. Let's bring in someone who wasn't an eyewitness to what happened, but who's talked to several of the eyewitnesses, our own Wolf Blitzer. Wolf, no relation to the wolf in our story. Welcome. Set the stage for us.
Thanks, Larry. And no relation to anyone or anything. As best as we're able to piece this together, and it's still developing at this hour, this all began in the morning when Peter opened his front yard gate and went out into a large meadow.
Now, by meadow, you mean like, what, a big green space?
That's right, a meadow.
So what happened then, Wolf?
Larry, we believe that Peter's attention was drawn to a small bird sitting on a branch of the tree.
Nothing unusual about that.
This bird was Peter's friend.
He's a friend with birds. Peter's kind of a special kid.
That's what we understand. And the bird was chirping happily, something to the effect that all is good or all is quiet.
Okay, so you got the kid and the bird. So far, so good.
That's right, Larry. And then a duck waddles out through the front yard gate.
Peter had left the gate open?
That's what authorities tell us. It appears the duck took advantage of the open gate to try to take a swim in the deep pond in the meadow.
Hey, ducks like to swim.
Here's where it starts getting messy.
Duck's always messy, especially if you eat it with your fingers.
The bird flew down to the grass, landed next to the duck, and shrugged his shoulders.
The bird's got shoulders. Who knew?
And Larry, the bird said to the duck something to the effect of, "What kind of bird are you? You can't even fly."
Oh, that's tough coming from a bird.
And the duck reportedly replied, "What kind of bird are you? You can't even swim." And then she dove into the pond.
So no chance for the bird to reply.
Apparently not. This debate continues for some time, apparently. The duck swimming back and forth in the pond. The bird hopping along on the bank.
So now nobody's flying. So, Wolf, no relation, is this just a story about an angry debate between a bird and a duck?
No, Larry. Now apparently Peter notices a cat crawling through the grass. The cat was creeping silently toward the bird.
Yeah, they're very quiet cats. What, did she think she could sneak up on the bird while it's distracted with the argument?
So it appears. Now there's a flurry of activity, Larry. We have an iReport video here. You can see Peter is yelling a warning to the bird, which flies up into a tree, while the duck is quacking at the cat from the middle of the pond.
I'm sure the cat's thinking, why bother climbing a tree? By the time I get up there, the bird flies away, because cats know birds can fly, right? Let's bring in the host of AC360, the great Anderson Cooper. Anderson, what happens next?
Well, good evening, Larry. Once again, we're keeping him honest. We've been watching the grandfather in this story, who goes by the name of Grandfather.
And that's mysterious.
And it appears that at this point, he comes out and yells at Peter. The people we've spoken to, and they've included people who know eyewitnesses, say he was angry that Peter went into the meadow because, in his words, it's the most dangerous place. Now, of course, we know of a lot more dangerous places in the world. I do personally, but that's what he said.
Anderson, didn't the grandfather mention a wolf or something?
Yes, he did, Larry. He asked Peter, what would you do if a wolf showed up here?
Weird. Almost like he knew something.
Thank you.
So, what, did Peter go back in the house after that?
No, Larry, our reporting indicates that Peter wasn't afraid of wolves.
That's what I thought, because otherwise we'd have no story here.
And Larry, from our sources, we learned that the grandfather locked the gate and took Peter back home.
Do we know why?
We're keeping him honest. We have no idea.
Over to our own Wolf Blitzer, who's covering the whole wolf angle in this story.
Thanks, Larry, and to our viewers around the world. Yes, as soon as Peter and his grandfather went back in the house, a big gray wolf came out in the forest.
Forest? What you would call in a meadow?
Yes, apparently there was some very fast tree growth going on as well.
Guessing now, Wolf, just thinking, if I was a cat, I'd head for that tree.
Larry, that's exactly what the cat did.
Wow, maybe my next wife should be a cat.
Here's the duck's first mistake.
Well, besides getting into a yelling match with a bird.
Right. The duck, apparently in a panic, squawked loudly and scrambled out of the pond.
Wait. Wouldn't she be safer in the water?
Maybe your next wife should be a duck. As our viewers around the world might have suspected, in a foot race, a duck is no match for a wolf.
This don't look so good for the duck.
According to police authorities on the scene, the lack of any feathers or other signs of a struggle indicate that the wolf caught up with the duck, grabbed her, and just swallowed her whole.
Me, I prefer the breast.
Thank you.
Now, Wolf, again, no relation. Let's just review where everybody is at this point in the story, because frankly, I started thinking about the duck and I got hungry.
Larry, sheriff's deputies on the scene say it came down to this. The cat was on one tree branch. And the bird is on another branch. There was an earlier unconfirmed report they were on the same branch. Authorities have ruled that out.
Oh, no, bird's got to keep his distance or his curtains for the bird.
And the wolf is circling the tree, gazing up at them.
So for the wolf, the duck was just like an appetizer or something.
Peter, who's safely behind the gate, is watching everything that's happening, and according to eyewitnesses, he's not frightened.
Oh, that's one tough kid. My youngest would be out of there like a shot.
And Larry, he's pretty athletic, too.
My kid? Yeah, he's batting 353 in the Pony League.
No, Peter. He ran into his house, got a strong rope, and climbed up the high garden wall.
Wolf, do we know how high that wall is?
We don't, Larry, although Fox News is reporting it's not really a wall at all.
Now, Wolf, tell me if I'm getting ahead of you here, but we're up against the clock. Is this wall something that could reach one of the branches of that tree the wolf is running around?
Absolutely, Larry. But of course, there's still more to the story.
Well, there better be. We got more music.
And at this point, Peter grabs hold of that branch and climbs into the tree.
What, like a monkey?
More like a boy. Now, Larry, Peter tells the bird to fly down and circle around the wolf's head.
This was why? To get the bird killed?
No. He specifically warned the bird not to let the wolf catch him.
So the bird's flying close to the wolf.
Very close indeed. Our sources indicate his wings may even have clipped the wolf's head.
Oh, that's got to be one angry wolf. I know how ticked off I get when a fly lands on me.
So now you've got the bird teasing the wolf trying to catch the bird, and the bird is too clever to be caught.
Hey, clever is good, but speed don't hurt either when a wolf's chasing you. I mean, I know we sometimes get coyotes at the pool. Now we've been talking about the bird and the wolf. I kind of lost track of Peter.
Oh, Peter's been busy, Larry. He made a noose in the rope, and now he starts lowering it very carefully.
What, he's trying to catch the bird?
Larry, stay with me on this. Peter manages to lasso the wolf by the tail.
Wow. Why didn't he go for the head? Much larger target. So now if I'm the wolf, I'm running around frantically trying to get loose, right?
That's exactly how we understand it.
Huh. Maybe I was a wolf in another life.
But Peter, I tied the other end of the rope to the tree. So the more the wolf ran around, the tighter the rope got around his tail.
Well, that's just physics, isn't it? If I remember back at the top of the show, we introduced some hunters. Whatever happened to them?
Larry, they were following the wolf's scent, and just at this point they appear in the meadow, shooting their guns.
Hey, that's what hunters do. So now we got one dead wolf, right?
Not quite, Larry. Peter yells to the hunters that he and the bird have captured the wolf. They don't need to shoot, but can they help take the wolf to the zoo?
Interesting. Clearly it's not Hollywood. He shares credit with the bird.
From one of our viewers, we have some iReport footage of the scene that follows. Unfortunately, no video, but we do have the music. So Peter is at the head of this procession, or parade.
Hey, his name's in the title of the story. That's only fair.
Thank you. later come the hunters, leading the wolf.
A wolf can't be happy about that.
Oh, I'm okay with it.
I meant the utter wolf.
Winding up the procession, Larry, Peter's grandfather and the cat. And we do have this quote from the grandfather. He says, "And what if Peter hadn't caught the wolf? What then?"
Yeah, that was going to be my question. He just fly away?
Oh, no, no. The bird's flying right along above everybody's head, chirping happily.
Wait, who wouldn't be happy? Everything's good, right? No divorces?
Well, there was the little matter of the duck.
Oh, speaking of which, tomorrow night, the Great Wolf Gang Puck for the full hour. All right, Wolf, what happened to the duck?
According to our own Dr. Sanjay Gupta, the wolf must have been in a terrible hurry because it swallowed the duck alive.
That is one lucky duck. For Wolf Blitzer, Anderson Cooper from Los Angeles. Good night!
That was the Idlewild Arts Academy Orchestra, conducted by Peter Askham, music director and composer in residence. The flute soloist was William Cedeno Torres. The oboist was Camille Liu. Clarinetist Shen Liu, bassoon Felix Wren, horns Christina Munoz, Rachel Hill, and Chris Wilson, timpani Patrick Murphy, and the concert mistress was Dorisia Yosifova. The recording engineer, Benjamin Moss.
Yes. Sleep.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer or your iPad. KCRW.com or HarryShearer.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And be just like the duck surviving the wolf, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. By the way, the Christmas sing-alongs I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast were conducted for the benefit of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. And even if you didn't come, you can still help them out. Such things are possible. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM New Orleans for making today's show possible and for getting just that much more famous by this very mention. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard hereon, always available till further notice at harryshearer.com. And this program is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.